Our next talk is on short-lived effects of walnut shell biochar in a long-term field experiment. The presenter is Deirdre Griffin. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I hope this will work. Yeah, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Is it working?
Hello, everybody. Thanks for being here. So I'm going to segue into part two of walnut shell biochar. And I'm going to tell you about the first 4 years of a long-term experiment where we've been looking at the effects of this biochar in a field experiment. And just to introduce myself, I'm Deirdre Griffin. I'm a PhD student at UC Davis working with Sanjay. But some of the knowledge gaps that motivated our research, we wanted to build upon all of the valuable lab experiments that have been done looking at mechanisms in biochar with soil. There have been some really interesting things coming out of that research, and we wanted to see if these mechanisms would hold true in the field. This is a review by Gerwick et al. That looked at the increase in studies of biochar, but a large proportion of them are in the lab, so we felt it was important to look at this biochar in the field. We also wanted to look at how biochar would impact field cropping systems in the long term. There have been quite a number of studies looking at the short-term effects of biochars, but we wanted to extend this. A meta-analysis looking at 371 experiments found that the average study length was only 113 days, and the longest was 3 years. So there's a bit of a lack of studies beyond the 1 or 2 year seasons. And finally, a lot of the foundational research in biochar, particularly in the field, has been done in tropical ecosystems. So we wanted to see what would happen in an agroecosystem in California where soil fertility, pH, and cation exchange capacity are less limiting. So from the research that has been done, we know that biochar can affect nutrient availability to plants in a few ways. One, for example, is a direct effect like cation exchange, where the biochar is giving off ions and also taking up ions, perhaps acting as a sink, a short-term sink, for ions like potassium and ammonium. You can also get more complicated indirect effects where biochar can perhaps influence organisms that are responsible for a lot of our nutrient cycles. So here I show the nitrogen cycle and different ways in which studies have found that biochar influences microbial activity and the transformations of nitrogen to different forms. So telling you a little bit more about this walnut shell biochar, it's produced locally in California in our area. And it's produced by a major walnut grower there who actually gasifies the walnut shells to produce energy to run his chilling facilities. So it's a really interesting biochar, and a recent study on this particular system found that the total carbon offsets with the system are slightly over 100 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per megagram of feedstock. And I looked this up this morning just to give you some context. That's about the equivalent of driving a car for 300 miles. So it's pretty significant. And so part of the system, though, is that the biochar is added back to the soil. And you get about 20 kilograms of biochar per megagram of feedstock. So we wanted to know, you know, when we're adding this biochar back to the soil, what's going to happen to the cropping systems. And with about 365,000 acres of walnuts in California, this has the potential to really impact energy demands, but it also has the potential to produce a lot of biochar. And so Sanjay showed you this as well, but these are the characteristics of this biochar: a high production temperature, because the purpose of it is primarily for energy production, pH of 9.7, quite a high ash content of 40%, high CEC and high surface area. So our objectives were to determine how biochar would impact tomato and corn yields over time. This is a common rotation in our area. We also wanted to see how biochar would affect plant available nitrogen pools over the growing seasons. I really like complexity, so I was really focused on the nitrogen cycle and all of the ways that the biochar could influence that. And there was also some previous studies with this biochar that found increases in net nitrification in lab incubation studies. We also wanted to see how biochar could interact differently with mineral and organic fertilizers, since these are both used in our area. And we wanted to see how this walnut shell biochar had changing impacts over time, over several seasons. So we, again, I'm telling you about the first 4 years of a continuing long-term field experiment at the Russell Ranch Sustainable Agriculture Facility at UC Davis. And we had a 2x2 factorial treatment design with mineral fertilizer and compost, plus and minus biochar. And this was organized in a randomized complete block design and on a silty clay loam soil, so a fairly fine textured soil. All the plots were flood irrigated. And here you see our rotation of tomato, corn. And this is a processing tomato that's commonly grown in the area. So biochar was applied only one time at a rate of 10 tons per hectare in 2012. And this is about a 0.5% rate. And then fertilizers were applied every year at the beginning of the season as you would cultivate. And then we took samples at 0 to 30 centimeters at various time points pre-application, as well as a few times during the growing season in years 2, 3, and 4. And some of the measurements we took were yield, obviously, with hand and machine harvested yields each year. And we also conducted soil nutrient analyses on the mid-season soils each year, as well as the pre-application soils. We looked at organic matter, extractable ions, Olsen phosphorus, pH, CEC. And we also looked at soil nitrate and ammonium concentrations at all of the sampling time points. So here I'm showing yield. The top two graphs are the tomato yields from years 1 and 3, and the bottom two are the corn yields from 2 and 4. And in each graph, the compost fertilizer is first, and then mineral fertilizer, both plus and minus biochar. So we see that we actually saw an effect on a biochar effect on yield only in year 2 with the corn yield. We saw a fertilizer effect each year, but a biochar effect only in year 2 when we saw about an 8% increase with both fertilizer types for the corn yield. And we found no significant interactions between biochar and fertilizer. So the biochar was influencing the systems similarly. There's a lot going on in this graph, but bear with me. This is showing each year the concentrations of potassium, calcium, and Olsen P. And we see, similarly to our yield, that we saw an increase in these ions only in year 2. I want to remind you, however, that the year 1 soils are actually pre-application. We didn't collect soils in the mid-season of year 1. However, since we didn't see any yield increases in that year, we're led to believe that there might not have been significant increases in these ions. So here we see an increase in potassium, calcium, and Olsen P with biochar in both fertilizer systems. And particularly in the potassium, you can see that this effect fades over time. And we didn't find any significant changes in organic matter, sulfate, magnesium, sodium, or CEC in any of the years. So thinking about why biochar could have added increased these concentrations so much, I went and looked at what was really being added in each of the systems. So in the mineral fertilizer, we added potassium oxide and phosphorus pentoxide annually. And the amount of potassium, phosphorus, and calcium being added in those is fairly low, but sufficient, kind of recommended for these cropping systems. So 17.2 kilograms per hectare potassium, 36 of phosphorus, and 0 of the calcium. When we look at total values in the compost, in a 9 tons per hectare annual application, you'll see 155 kilograms per hectare of potassium added, 120 of phosphorus, and 307 of calcium. In the walnut shell biochar, you see, based on the total contents of this biochar, we see that the biochar is adding 930 kilograms per hectare of potassium, 64 of phosphorus, and 583 of calcium. And again, these are based on total concentrations, so not available, but it's still quite a lot more than particularly is being added in the mineral fertilizer. So we concluded that biochar is most likely directly adding these nutrients to the soil. Biochar did not affect the ammonium or nitrate concentrations in any year. Here I'm showing the year 3 sampling, but this is representative of the other years as well. So the circles are compost fertilizer, and the triangles are mineral, and then the gray is without biochar, and the black is with biochar. So you see that there's changes over time, there's changes with different fertilizers, but the biochar does not have any effect on these concentrations. And as we know, these ions are pretty dynamic, so it could be that we didn't really capture all of the dynamics throughout the growing season, but we found that in all the years there was no significant effect. So our conclusions, we found that tomato and corn yields were not affected except that the yields increased only in year 2, most likely due to the increases in potassium, calcium, and phosphorus. That biochar did not affect the plant available N pools in any year. And we found that there was no significant interaction with either of the fertilizers, that the biochar had similar effects in both fertilizer systems. And that the biochar seemed to have a delayed effect, not having any influence on yield until year 2, but then these effects faded after year 2. So if you're a grower thinking about whether you want to apply biochar to your field, you can see that this biochar in particular has a positive effect, but it's short-lived. And since biochar is not intended to be applied every year, you'd want to do some cost analyses to see if this is something you want to add. But we're continuing to monitor these plots. As I said, this is a continuing long-term experiment. So here's some yields from the past year where we saw that this is continuing with the trend we've seen where there was no significant influence of biochar on yield. But we're going to continue to monitor these plots and the soil and look at mechanisms that could be going on. And with that, I want to acknowledge particularly Dayon Wang and Farun Kim for working with me in the field and in the lab, and Israel Herrera, who manages the plots at the Russell Ranch Sustainable Ag Facility, and also to Russ Lester, who's the farmer that donated the walnut shell biochar to us for research. Thank you very much.
Yeah, was it a one-time biochar application?
It was a one-time, yeah, at the beginning of the 4 years, yes. Yeah, I'm actually in that lab, and I've been looking at the microbial communities. I measured ammonia-oxidizing bacteria and archaea and found that there were no significant effects. We also have some PLFA data from these plots, but we're still analyzing that. Actually, I failed to mention that the compost plots did get leguminous cover crops every year, as is common in the organic fields that we have in that area. So the compost plots were getting legumes, yeah. Okay. Thank you.